This is Central Time. State Republicans are rolling out their plans to respond to COVID-19 in Wisconsin. The Assembly GOP unveiled a package of legislation on Tuesday. Among other things, it calls for teachers to return to their classrooms and state workers to return to their offices. It bans restrictions on church gatherings, and it would give the legislature's budget committee the power to allocate federal COVID funding and to approve plans to distribute a COVID vaccine. Not in the plan, anything having to do with masks. Democrats immediately panned the idea, calling it politically driven. Senate Republicans also came out with a COVID plan more limited than the Assembly's. The two proposals were introduced 2 weeks after Governor Evers rolled out his. He wants to spend $540 million to continue COVID testing and other services being paid for by the feds. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the Assembly Republican proposals as you've seen it so far? If you're a teacher or state worker, how do you feel about having to go back to the classroom or office? Where do you stand on restricting church gatherings? Should there have been a statewide mask mandate included? Call 800-642-1234. Sean Johnson is with us, WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief. Sean, welcome back.
Hey, Rob.
I want to touch briefly on a different issue before we dive into these COVID-19 proposals. Sean, you've been watching court news related to Wisconsin's election outcome. State Supreme Court says we're not going to take up a Trump campaign lawsuit, at least not just yet. What's the latest there? And then in federal court.
Yeah, we have a lot to keep track of right now. So the way that the Supreme Court left it, they did keep the door open for President Trump to challenge the case in circuit courts, which is where state law says challenges to recounts should start. And that is what Justice Brian Hagedorn, the court's swing justice, said in his ruling. You know, he didn't rule on the merits of the case, but he denied the Trump campaign's initial petition because he said these have to start in circuit court. So the Trump campaign sent it to Dane in Milwaukee County Circuit Courts. The Chief Justice consolidated those cases into one case and put them under the umbrella of a retired or reserve judge from Racine County. And so that is now proceeding. There's going to be a scheduling conference in that today. And, you know, the clock is ticking on this stuff.
And then in federal court, you're watching that today. What's happening there?
In federal court, there is going to be, it sounds like, a hearing next Thursday, the 10th, in President Trump's federal lawsuit challenging the results of Wisconsin's elections. That lawsuit seeks to, the word that the lawsuit used was remand the case to the Wisconsin legislature to choose Wisconsin's presidential electors. And so the Trump campaign says they're going to call 4 to 7 witnesses at a hearing on Thursday starting at 9 a.m. That is the 10th of December. And so, you know, we'll say it again and again, clock is ticking here because on December 14th, presidential electors are scheduled to meet to, you know, really, really finalize the results of the election, not only in Wisconsin, but nationwide. There is also another federal case challenging Wisconsin's election results filed by Attorney Sidney Powell, who's been very vocal, prominent, challenging a lot of these cases around the country. And in that case, briefs are due next week, the 8th. So a little bit before the hearing in the Trump case.
All right, let's turn to the thing we originally asked you to come out and talk about, Sean. Can you sum up the COVID-19 package from Assembly Republicans?
Yeah, we just need about 5 to 10 minutes to read through this bulleted list here, Rob, because it's like it's just an extremely broad. There's a lot there, and it's kind of hard to summarize. I mean, a few weeks ago, we were talking about how after Governor Tony Evers came out with his COVID-19 bill, there was no Republican counterpart. I mean, Representative Voss, the Speaker of the Assembly, came out and said, "We don't have a bill." They kind of have one now. I mean, they have in this gigantic summary from the Nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau. They have about 50 proposals, and it's all over the place. You know, there's a lot of stuff in there in terms of sending teachers and state workers back to in-person work. You know, there's stuff in there, a lot in there, that would give the legislature more power to do everything from, you know, spend surplus state money to controlling how Wisconsin distributes a COVID-19 vaccine. So, you know, you name it, it's in there. It's a very broad bill introduced by Republicans. And, you know, there's a lot in there that is clearly a non-starter with Democrats.
I've talked to some Republican legislators over the course of this year who said we don't need statewide mandates. There should be local control based on conditions in local areas. If I'm reading this right, Sean, some of the provisions here would override local government's ability to impose certain kinds of health restrictions. What kind of things are there?
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly right. It's kind of the opposite of local control. I mean, it would restrict local control. I would restrict the power of local health officers from ordering the closure of a business unless that closure applies to all types of businesses. So if a local order closes, I would presume that is saying if it closes, say, a restaurant or something in the name of public health, they would have to apply to all businesses. It also prohibits any kind of state or local order from prohibiting gatherings in churches. So that is something that, you know, state law says can be done right now. Of course, a lot of local orders have been tied up in court, and in some cases, local governments have been reluctant to issue those following a Supreme Court decision in this May. But under this bill or this, package of legislation, local power to restrict gatherings would be constrained.
We're taking a look at the package of bills Assembly Republicans unveiled this week related to COVID-19 in Wisconsin. WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson is with us. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you like or dislike about Assembly Republicans' plan? What do you think about making teachers go back into classrooms or forcing state workers to go back to their offices? Limits on local ability to close businesses or restrict the numbers of people in businesses. What do you think should be done at the state level? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about what the state legislature is doing when it comes to COVID-19 in Wisconsin. Assembly Republicans introduced a package of legislation earlier this week, and state senators also have some plans in the works. The governor as well. Sean Johnson is our guest, WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. What do you want? What don't you want when it comes to state legislation passed related to COVID-19? Sean, let's look a little more at the assembly plan. As we said, there are lots of things there. One thing not mentioned in any of these, I think, is anything related to a statewide mask mandate. Is that right?
That's right. And I mean, there's not a prohibition on a statewide mask mandate in the way that you see kind of prohibitions on restricting crowds at churches, for example. The plan is just kind of silent on mask mandates. So it's not in there. It's not in there. They obviously went a different direction.
And there's a lot related to schools in this, Sean. Can you tease out some of the points when it relates to education?
Yeah. So, I mean, for one, it would require teachers to be physically located in a school building when they're instructing students, unless teachers provide schools with the doctor's note on why they don't have to be there. And the state would withhold funding to districts that don't comply, and they'd be on kind of a graduated schedule as to when they would withhold those payments. If a school wanted to go to virtual instruction, it would require a 2/3 vote by local school boards, but that board's approval would only last for 14 days. So if the school wanted to keep in virtual instruction, it would have to, take votes every 2 weeks in order to continue it. And then it says that school boards would have to pay parents $371 for each student if the schools are providing virtual instruction. So there would be a financial disincentive to a school remaining in virtual instruction. So it doesn't quite take the step of mandating that teachers and students be physically in those buildings, the classroom, the school buildings. But it does require teachers to be there, and there are some pretty big penalties in there and kind of headaches in there for schools that don't want to follow those requirements.
We talked to the head of the Wisconsin Hospital Association, 10 days ago or so. They were looking for things like funding to help with making sure they are staffed, that they have the resources to deal with this growing number of COVID-19 cases over the last month. Is there anything in here along those lines?
In terms of funding for hospitals?
Yeah.
It gives the finance committee more power over state funding. There's kind of some discretionary funding that was granted to the finance committee in the last COVID bill that the legislature passed back in April, that sunsetted, went away. And so this would bring it back and then add some of that to the power of the legislature to spend that money. But as far as like something specific to the hospitals, I don't think there's exactly something like that in here.
And now that we've been focusing on the assembly, what have we seen from the state Senate this week?
The state Senate is taking a much different approach than the assembly or than Governor Evers. I think you could say that Governor Evers and assembly Republicans have proposed a lot of stuff. There's not necessarily a lot of overlap in what they agree about. The Senate is proposing very little. They are saying that we want to take money that a surplus in medical assistance funding, and we want to use that to fund COVID-19 issues. So essentially, they want to take money that's already there and redirect it for kind of unspecified issues related to COVID-19. And it gives you a sense of what the new Wisconsin Senate is like. I mean, they have a bigger Republican majority there now. They have different faces. They have a new leader. And right now, they are very content to say, we don't need to come back and deal with this in calendar year 2020. And we don't need to necessarily embrace this stuff that our Republican colleagues have proposed in the state assembly.
And finally, Sean, the reaction from Governor Evers to both chambers.
He was, there's a lot in here that there's, you just know there's no way that the governor would get on board with. But he didn't spend a lot of time criticizing that when he talked about it to reporters. Actually, in the prepared statement from his office, he was kind of noncommittal, said he wants Republicans to come out with plans and work together on a proposal that will pass both houses with bipartisan support. He criticized Senate Republicans for not coming to the table, with their own plan. So not like especially harsh words from the governor there, but you can see that, if this is a negotiation, at least publicly, they're not in the same ballpark, really.
Sean, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob.
Sean Johnson is WPR's State Capitol Bureau Chief. We talked to him about the package of bills Assembly Republicans unveiled this week to address COVID-19. Coming up, Food Network TV host and cookbook author Ina Garten joins us for Food Friday to talk about her newest cookbook, a good one for this year, Modern Comfort Food. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. It's Food Friday, and our next guest knows a lot about food and its power to make the worst of times feel less bad. That's part of why her new cookbook is all about comfort food. You can join in at 800-642-1234 as we talk to Ina Garten. What is your go-to comfort food? What one food or dish helped you get through this year? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ina Garten is the author of the Barefoot Contessa cookbooks and host of Barefoot Contessa on Food Network. She also writes a monthly column for Food Network magazine. Her new cookbook is called Modern Comfort Food. Ina, thanks a lot for joining us today.
So happy to be with you. How are you?
Good. Well, I got to ask you about the timing here. Did you come into 2020 thinking you're going to write about comfort food, or did you take a look at 2020 and said, we better write about comfort food?
I knew there was going to be a pandemic. I'm extremely clairvoyant. No, of course not. 2 years before the book comes out, I decide what I want to write. And I knew that there was going to be an election a month after the book came out. And so I knew no matter what side of the aisle you were going to be on, I knew people were going to be totally stressed out. And so that's why I wrote it. I thought comfort food would be really what people need and what they want. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll do it in a more modern way, like update it, make it easier, make it fresher. And that was the whole motivation for it. And the last photo shoot, the last day of the last photo shoot, was March 16th,
wow,
when everybody started to lock down. And then the whole thing rolled out. And, of course, there are layers on layers of stress that have happened since then. So it was I did it for a reason, but the timing was just unbelievable.
Really good timing. And let's talk about what we mean by comfort food. You write that it can mean something a little different to different people. But in general, what does comfort food do for us? What does it mean to us?
I think it's based on what remembered flavors, what we used to have as a kid. But I think if you look back at, you know, tomato soup from a can and a grilled cheese sandwich, I don't think you'd think it was all that good anymore, but the memory of it is. And so what I wanted to do is make a tomato soup that was really easy to make, but it has a little saffron in it to give it a little heat, and a grilled cheese sandwich with good cheddar and chutney, and it's made in a panini press, so it's really easy to make. So I just wanted to update each flavor, but that's really what it's based on. It's based on something that you remember from childhood. And that's, you know, that depends on whatever culture you're from. If you're Italian or if you're French, or I remember asking my English film crew what they used to have as kids. Did they have peanut butter and jelly? And they were like, "Ooh, that's disgusting." I was like, "Peanut butter and jelly's not disgusting. What did you used to eat?" And they said, "Oh, we used to have white bread with canned baked beans, you know, baked beans right out of the can, and a slice of American cheddar. And that was what we had for lunch. And that's so good. Can we make one for you?" It was just dreadful. But it was a remembered flavor for them. So that's what they felt comfortable with.
Well, let's clear our palate from that bean sandwich. You shared a few recipes with us. And this is one, when you were asking your friends, they said some kind of tuna sandwich was one of their favorites.
Yeah.
I did a 180 on this. I thought tuna was the grossest thing when my mom ate it when I was a kid. Now, I love tuna melts. You sent us the ultimate tuna melt. We've got it at WPR.org/Food Friday. What makes the ultimate tuna melt ultimate?
Well, first, the good tuna, like Italian tuna, rather than just like white meat tuna, you know, just American white meat tuna. It's packed in oil, and it's just got great flavor. And I do it with cheese, and I do it with microgreens, and it's just fresher, and it's got more flavor, and it's just delicious. And it's what you remember it should have been, but it wasn't. No, I never liked warm tuna. Ooh.
Exactly. What was it about, like, because you surveyed your friends, like I said, and it seems like this was a really common answer, tuna sandwiches. What was it? Yeah. What made that a comfort food for so many people?
I think everybody remembers having them in their lunchbox. You know, it's like what your mother used to pack to go to school, or when on a Saturday when you came home from a game or something. You'd have a tuna sandwich. It was just a really common, it was like right up there with peanut butter and jelly.
Now, one thing that I love in your book, I grew up, my mom's side of the family, Polish. My grandparents used to, you know, grind their own kielbasa. You've got a couple different kielbasa comfort food recipes.
I love kielbasa. I think it's got great flavor, and it's so easy because it's already smoked and cooked. So you don't have to cook it, and there aren't all these steps in it. So I think there's a clam stew that has kielbasa in it. There are several recipes that have kielbasa in it, and I just love it. And actually, I'm working on a baked kielbasa for my next book.
Ooh,
which is just delicious with honey and mustard.
And you write in the book that a lot of our comfort foods have come from immigrant communities over the years, from Polish ancestors or maybe more recent Thai immigrants. We've really adopted a lot of them as comfort foods. Could you talk about
that
a little?
Pizza was basically came from Italy, and it's, you know, it's changed so much. But I did a pizza carbonara with some shaved Brussels sprouts, and it's just great. And you can make your own pizza dough if you want to, or you can just go to the local pizzeria and get some dough and make really good pizzas.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Ina Garten, who her newest cookbook of many is called Modern Comfort Food, a well-timed book indeed. Let's bring on a caller now. Kristen is with us in West Salem. Kristen, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Kristen?
My question, I actually have a question about a secret to a good stew. I was raised with stew and goulash and those kinds of things, and just kind of wondering about what you would say would be the secret to a really good stew.
Well, you know, I did a beef stew in this book because I thought that's a remembered flavor, a real American thing. But it's usually kind of boring. You know, it's potatoes and peas. And so any stew, I'm always looking for how can I give it more flavor. So instead of the chuck, I used short ribs, which has so much flavor. And when you cook it, not only the beef tastes good, but it really flavors the sauce. And then I added red wine to the sauce. I added cognac to the sauce, things that you would find in like beef bourguignon. But it's still an American stew. It's beef and potatoes. And so anything that you can add to the sauce and also browning the meat and browning the onions so that they get the most flavor from them, that really makes a difference.
Good luck, Kristen. Hope that helps. Sorry, you're going to say, Ina?
I was just asking if that helped. But I think, you know, you really need to add things and also sear the meat very well so the browning part of it gets into it. And I think one of the critical things about a sauce having a lot of flavor is that it has a little edge. It has a wine edge or a vinegar edge or something like that that really kind of wakes up the other flavors.
Fantastic. Kristen, thanks a lot for calling in with that question. I want to get to another recipe, Ina, you shared with us for a savory crepe. This is a buckwheat crepe. Complete. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that accent right.
Absolutely.
Tell us
perfectly
about the crepe.
Well, it was actually from a restaurant in New York, and it's she makes very. It's called La Mercerie in Soho, and she makes very country French food, and this was just spectacular. So it's a buckwheat crepe, and then it's with ham and cheese, and you roll it up, and it's just with a little bit of a sauce on it. And it's so simple, and you can make, you know, really prepare it in advance and then just heat the whole thing up. And it's just got great flavor. It's a good breakfast or a lunch or, you know, it's a weekend thing. It's wonderful.
And it's got, I think, Gruyere cheese. And anytime I've had something with ham and Gruyere together, it's something magical.
It is. It's really good together. It's really great. Yeah, I love that. I love that dish. And when I go to La Mercerie, I always order it.
And then one more recipe. You've got some beverages in the book, some cocktails. This isn't one of them, though. The third recipe we have up is the vanilla cold brewed iced coffee. I could see that being pretty comforting. Why is this a comfort for you?
It depends on, I think probably in the summer, it's like really satisfying. And cold brewed coffee is really interesting because when you steep the beans in the water overnight, somehow it's much less acidic. And I like to use vanilla coffee beans or just add a drop of vanilla if you can't find vanilla coffee beans and a little bit of milk or cream. And it's like having an ice cream soda, but it's just coffee. And I just find it really satisfying.
And cold brewed coffee.
That's what we're really looking for.
Cold brewed coffee doesn't need to be a big production, if I'm reading your recipe right. It's not that hard to pull off.
No, it's not hard to pull off. Basically, you take a big jar and you put beans and water in, and you put it in the refrigerator. And the next day, it's coffee. And it's, you can heat it up if you want hot coffee, but I like to make it into cold iced coffee. It's just delicious.
It sounds fantastic. Now, Ina, getting back to the big picture here, a lot of times comfort foods, I think, people think they're looked down on, you know, the mac and cheese and pizza as just, you know, nothing fancy, just ordinary stuff. Make us fall in love with our comfort foods. Give us permission to enjoy them again.
Well, you know, one of the things about mac and cheese is it can be really just the base for something. And so I'm always making some version of it because, I mean, we all love mac and cheese. It's great. you just don't want it to be boring. So this is actually wild mushroom mac and cheese where I sauteed a lot of wild mushrooms. And that flavor with the pasta is just amazing. And you can assemble the entire thing in advance in a baking dish and just throw it in the oven before dinner. So that's really great. And, as I said, with carbonara sauce and shaved Brussels sprouts, it's crispy and it's, the vegetables really kind of bring out the other flavors. And there's also a pasta carbonara, which is usually so heavy and rich that you can have like two bites and that's it. But I added spring vegetables to it, asparagus and julienne sugar snap peas, and it's just fresher and lighter and more flavorful. So that's what I was looking for each of the dishes. You know, when you take something classic, it's usually not that exciting. And it's, as you say, it's not that interesting, but you can really bring fresh flavors to things and give it much more interest. And I hope I did that.
Ina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. So good to talk to you. Have a good holiday.
You too. Ina Garten is the author of the Barefoot Contessa cookbooks and host of Barefoot Contessa on the Food Network. We've been talking about her new cookbook. It's called Modern Comfort Food. We've got the links to those buckwheat crepes, vanilla cold brew iced coffee, and the ultimate tuna melt up at WPR.org/Food Friday. Coming up, a new survey shows a third of high school seniors say they're reconsidering whether to apply for college this year. We'll find out how students are rethinking the value of higher education and how colleges are responding. Now it's the Ideas Network's year-end membership drive. Jay Carlisle Larson is with me. You make these Food Friday conversations and all of our other conversations possible when you give. Join in, support the programs you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have, about 5 minutes left in this hour, and we're looking for 10 more people to join the WPR team. Make your gift right now to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every single day.
We just heard a great Food Friday conversation, this time with Ina Garten, big name in the food world, with some great recipes and great comfort food advice. And as always, pretty much always, recipes to share with you at WPR.org/Food Friday. I've learned a lot. I've learned so much hosting these Food Friday conversations over the year. It's really added a lot to my cooking. If that is the same for you, if you've taken home tips from Food Friday and tried them over the weekend, maybe think about what that's been worth to you and then make your gift right now. You can do it online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And the great thing is that you get to choose an amount that works for you. But I want to put something on your radar, because during this membership drive, we have a special gift. You can ask for one of the Reach Out and Read thank you gifts when you give, say, $10 a month or more.
Your donation to WPR will power essential news and quality entertainment, and your thank you gift will provide books to young children during their doctor visits. Thank you for making a difference for kids in your community and for WPR with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm Kathy Ross, and I live in Whitewater. WPR basically accounts for so much of what I know about Wisconsin. Politics, geography, people, interesting places to go. Subscribing to the daily email is a routine part of my life. I know before I go to bed at night, I'm going to look at that email and see things I really need to try and focus on. And then I've recently gotten to the podcast world, and it is wonderful to be able to, oops, I missed that, and now I can find it out here, and it's great.
Make your contribution today, because listener support makes Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Give now at WPR.org and click donate.
You can make your gift online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Central Time, Rob Ferret here with Jay Carlisle Larson. Listener support is the single biggest source of funding for all the WPR programs you rely on. That's why your support on this last weekday of the year-end member drive is so important. Maybe your gift is $10 a month or $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount to give.
If you've never given to Wisconsin Public Radio before because you don't think you can give enough to make a difference, think again. It's gifts from tens of thousands of people combined together that make WPR programs possible.
Many first-time donors will give $10 or $20 a month for their WPR listening. You decide the amount that works for you and then join in at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now think about what you spend money on every day. Maybe it's coffee, maybe it's takeout. That all really adds up. And it's easy to spend things that are part of your routine.
Wisconsin Public Radio is part of your routine also. It's your news source, your conversation starter, your place to learn stuff. So spend some money on it today. You pick the amount, maybe $10 a month, maybe a dollar a day. That would come out to $30 a month. Either way, think about what these conversations are worth to you and then make a commitment to help support them, to help pay for it, and then make your gift. You can do it online at WPR.org or make a call, 888-202-2552.